Radio broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson, host of the program. We homeschool our five children out here in the eastern plains of Colorado, restructuring our concept of education because we don't trust the public schools. We don't trust conventional education, so we went back to God's Word and tried to find some basic principles to restructure our concept of education. I put it in my book, Upgrade the 10 Secrets to the Best Education for Your Child, and that's available at our website, kevinswanson.com. But we'd like to follow up on education because it's obviously important. Here's an AP story. It talks about cheating in the public schools. I mean, can you believe it, folks? Cheating in the public schools? This time, the teachers are cheating. That's right. The students aren't cheating. It's the teachers cheating. And they're cheating because of the high-stakes standardized testing that, of course, is linked to merit pay in public schools across America. Republicans have fought hard on that. Not sure the Democrats fought as hard to get standardized testing throughout some of our states, but we see it across America now and cheating all over the place. New York education officials found 21 proven cases of teachers cheating from Buffalo to Long Island, according to records obtained under the State Freedom of Information Act. Teachers usually report cheating, but some said the practice is more common than records show. Teachers have read off answers during a test, sent students back to correct wrong answers, photocopied secure tests for use in class, inflated scores, peeked at questions, then drilled those topics in class before the test, according to records obtained by the Associated Press. Well, folks, I would expect this kind of thing to happen. I attended an excellence in teaching seminar put on by our governor in the state something like 10 years ago. They're trying to bring the CSAPs, the standardized testing, to Colorado 10 years ago. And we had an expert for the University of Tennessee out here to explain to us why standardized testing was the way to go. And he showed us all the graphs and showed that some teachers did better than other teachers. Well, somebody asked during this whole presentation, what exactly was it, Mr. Expert from Tennessee, that to produce such good teachers? And why are some teachers better than other teachers? And this guy's response was priceless. He said, well, as it turns out, some teachers are more flexible than others. They walk into the classroom and they teach to where the student happens to be. They tailor make the material to that child's needs, talents, and abilities. And, you know, I wanted to ask the question. So, in other words, they didn't standardize the testing in order to accomplish good results on standardized tests. Well, yeah, of course, that's what's going on here. But the temptation, of course, is to teach to the test. And this is what happens with standardized testing. Teachers are all the time encouraged to teach to the test, teach to the test, teach to the standardized test. But in the long run, I believe you'll do better if you don't standardize the teaching material. The problem, of course, is that these teachers only have these students for 1 year at a time, for the most part, unless they teach in very small school districts. So because they only have the student for one year at a time, they want to teach to the material that's going to be on the test in order for them to accomplish something that particular year. Well, standardized tests, of course, will force the teachers to teach to the test because standardization and centralization is the mantra of the public schools. Folks, this is what happens when you centralize control. This is what happens when you get conventional schools. You cram 30 to 40 kids into a classroom. You can't possibly tailor-make a curriculum to each individual child in that classroom. It's not doable. Now, if you had 5 or 6 students per teacher, you might be able to accomplish it, but not 25. So centralization and standardization always will produce a substandard form of education out there, and that's the kind of thing that we see in the public schools. But that's one of the reasons why we advocate homeschooling, folks. It's one reason we advocate maximizing on the principle of individuality on this radio program. We think you could produce some really, really excellent education if you apply one-on-one teaching and do not standardize, but tailor-make that education to that child. You ask my children what grade they're in, they have no idea what grade they're in. We maximize to their own abilities. At some points, they're 2, 3, 4 grade levels ahead of where they're supposed to be. Well, folks, certainly the idea of standardization, centralization has to happen when you governmentalize everything, which is what has happened in the recent decades, recent centuries of the modern world. My encouragement, get out of the box. There's no one-size-fits-all form of education. The balance of structure and liberty is something that Christians especially need to get down because, folks, that's a Trinitarian form of life. Structure, freedom, the one, the many ought to be balanced in a Trinitarian form of education. We're going to talk a little bit more about how to do this in a practical sense with Terry Spray from Christian Cottage Schools next on Generations. Terry Spray is next on Generations. Stay with me.
Folks, with this radio program, we're bringing relationships and truth back to a lost and lonely world. That's why we advocate homeschooling, mentorship, family-based economics, and a biblical worldview, all as part of our homeschool ministry based in Colorado. For homeschooling seminars, curriculum, and encouragement, visit our website at chec.org. That's check.org on the web. For apprenticeship, mentorship, and entrepreneurship training for your children and your family, you need to hook up with our AME program at ameprogram.com. That's ameprogram.com. You know, the Generations Radio program is a ministry of generations with vision, where we work hard to cast a vision for the next generation through each and every radio broadcast. Tune in online at generationsradio.org for the daily show, the blog, and the online store. That's generationsradio.org.
Welcome back to Generations Radio Broadcast. This is Kevin Swanson, and with me, Terry Spray. And Terry is the director of Christian Cottage Schools. She's been part of the homeschooling movement in Colorado for at least 25 years. She was part of the first interview that we did on this Generations Radio Broadcast 7 years ago. Welcome back to the program, Terry.
Talk to you, Kevin.
It's great to have you back. And, you know, you've been part of the movement for a long time. I mean, you were here at the outset of the Colorado homeschool movement in 1986. Wow.
Yes, it was a different world then, Kevin.
I'm sure it was. I'm guessing homeschooling has changed pretty dramatically over 25 years.
It really has. We couldn't even get teacher's editions in those days.
Yeah.
It was very complicated. I remember talking with some of the major publishers about what I was doing, and they weren't sure because I was teaching my own children as well as a few more because I'm a teacher and I've always been able to do that. And just that whole questioning, doubting, disbelieving that homeschooling was safe or legal. And I remember saying things about it at my church, and they'd always look at me and say, "Is that legal?" It was amazing in those days.
Well, and I think people were used to the box. They'd been in secular conventional schools, sometimes Christian conventional schools, for, you know, 150 years. And even though homeschooling has been done for the last 5,900 years of world history, this was a fairly new phenomena for the modern world.
It really was. And it was interesting to see that in those days in 1986, most of the families I met had basically a stack of curriculum sitting beside them at home that resembled a classroom, typically a Christian school. And that's all they knew to do was to just get every single book that the schools were using and pile them up at home and play school at home.
So effectively, you brought it back into the home. Now, you started with the cottage school idea, which was sort of a small home situation where you brought a number of people into your home for schooling, but then you transferred into homeschooling by the later 80s, as I recall.
Yes, basically we started with just a little mini classroom, but we still didn't do it the way the classrooms were done other places. Every child had their own curriculum program. We did devotions together. The children all did their books individually, just very much like a homeschool would be. And then we did unit studies in the afternoons together.
As you look at the homeschooling movement today, Terry, what do you think? Do you think it's changed dramatically? How has it changed?
Well, you know, Kevin, we were pretty much pioneers in those days, and people were groping in the dark trying to figure out what to do. Now we have so many options, it's more of a groping to figure out which thing to do. Because the big changes, I think, are a lot of the cooperative education programs that you see out there. Some are even public school programs.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think that homeschools generally are too structured or not structured enough?
That's a loaded question.
I know it is. I mean, I'm sure the answer is probably just yes, you know, whatever happens in different homes may not be the best situation, but parents sure try to put together the best program they can.
I think that's it. I think there's always going to be a balance. And even when parents over the years have come to me with a really rough experience where perhaps there was a death in their family or mom or dad were terribly ill, they had a huge move, and, you know, those there's going to be those years where homeschooling is a huge struggle. I've always seen God's grace, Kevin. I've always seen it where they could have a beautiful result even though they didn't do it all just right. And I think, honestly, that is just prayer.
And I think what happens in the home school is as families begin to realize that education, at least within the home, is not a paint-by-numbers kit. It's a sculpturing. And sculpturing is a little more difficult, takes a little more wisdom, a little more creativity, and hopefully some guidance from the Spirit of God to pull it off.
Exactly, because a good sculpturing artist is able to say, I see in this block of cement a man's face, and then he just moves things away and away and away and adds a little bit here and carves a little bit there. And I think you as a dad would probably agree there's a lot of little chips you want to remove in your children, things that you don't really want to see there. I think we do that a lot.
But the government brings in the paint-by-numbers approach. An institutional approach is always paint-by-numbers. In other words, you've got to give this to this child in the first grade, then you give this to this child in the second grade, then you give this to this 8-year-old in the third grade, and so forth and so on. And in the end, though, children are very individual, and they don't always fit into that system.
You know, Kevin, children don't learn to walk at the same age. Why do we think they all need to learn to read at the same age?
Yeah, exactly.
Don't yank a baby up on his feet just because he's 1 year old.
Yeah.
You wait until he's developmentally ready to walk across the room. Same thing for schooling. Why do we think every six-year-old is ready to learn all their phonics and read sight words?
You think that some families are just different in terms of academics? Some families sort of expect a 12-year-old to read Aristotle, whereas other families are working through some basic readers and, little Dr. Seuss at that age. You know, do you see differences between families?
Absolutely. There are families who just totally see things more classically. They want to do more deep studies, like you said, Aristotle, Plato. They want to learn all of those great authors. I know you have a passion in that area, too. And yet there's other families who say, just the basics. Let's keep it simple. We want to make sure our children are well-equipped to do whatever job they have in mind to do. And it really is more of a simplistic approach to learning, because that's where that family is feeling self-confident and comfortable. And the parents may not understand a lot of that higher level literary analysis, but that doesn't mean they can't be wonderful homeschool families.
Right. And the principle of individuality, I think, is a wonderfully liberating principle, because, you know, we don't have to create a one-size-fits-all sort of education and then require that of every single family and every single kid on planet Earth.
Oh, that's frightening to imagine that. And of course, that's what we see in the socialism and the fascist governments and Marxist governments, that's exactly what they're trying to do.
Yeah.
And, of course, we see that constantly in our own public school systems, that they are basically moving that way.
So you've worked with literally hundreds of homeschoolers, probably thousands of homeschoolers over the last couple of
decades.
Well
over 10,000 children.
10,000 children. Amazing. Wow. Meaning it's not a one-size-fits-all. You have designed a specific curriculum. You walk with parents through that experience.
We do. We basically listen a lot to begin with. We ask the parents to give us a lot of information about their family and their goals and their ambitions and even some of their struggles, so that we can really understand and come along compassionately. And as one of my friends says, it's not that MS, Master's of Science degree, it's that HS, Holy Spirit degree, that really helps us help parents.
Yes.
So we prayerfully come alongside to find out exactly what that child needs and exactly what that parent wants to do in education to create a program that's really suited to each family.
Yes. Well, now talk to us about unit studies, because I know that you have prepared many, many, many forms of curriculum, and unit study is one of your favorites. Why is that?
Well, Kevin, there's a lot of other things I could have done with 200 hours a month for 10 years. But we wrote unit studies over that period of time because we really wanted the learning to come alive for the children. When children came in for testing, it was like this. They would say, oh, yeah, I remember that. I read about that last year. Oh, I can't remember. And then they'd say, oh, I remember that. I did a project on that. Here's the answer. Bing. And we saw this as a common thread. And we said, you know what children do, they really do remember better. So we decided to create a program that was much more organized. There were a lot of interesting unit study programs out there, but they were more of idea makers. And parents that I worked with wanted us to lay it out for them. So we went ahead and structured our unit studies where there would be reading real books, but if the library didn't happen to carry those real books, you could still read other books in that topic area. It wouldn't stop you from doing the unit study. And so then we created something where the parent could just kind of open it, read about a piece of information with a devotional message attached to it, some vocabulary in the lesson, and then do a practical hands-on activity with the children to reinforce the lesson.
And again, what you're trying to do is integrate all these different aspects of learning into one particular learning experience, which is very, very powerful, because if you're learning math at one time, you're learning history another time, you're learning literature and writing at another time, but you never see any kind of integration of these things, which happens in education all the time. The end result is you have a highly, highly non-integrated form of learning, and children have a very, very difficult time retaining it, let alone applying it to real life.
Well, when I first learned about unit studies, Kevin, you're so right. They were saying, this is what you ought to do with the really bright, gifted children. Absolutely. But it's also what you want to do with the slow kids who really need some more hands-on instruction. Well, if it's working for the brightest and the slowest, doesn't it work for everyone in between?
And the amazing thing is that you can sometimes teach a unit study to multiple age levels. I mean, you might have five or six children at different age levels, but you can effectively bring the same unit study to all of them, and some of them get a little more out of it than the others, but they're getting the same basic content.
And that's exactly how I started to write these. I actually had a variety of ages in the cottage school in front of me. They went from 5 to 15 years of age. And I said, okay, let's get everybody together. We've all been doing all our basic, you know, skills in the morning alone. Let's gather together like a family and let's learn. And so what I would do with the older children, they would bring a textbook to the conversation and use it for some extra research or the encyclopedia or a dictionary. And the younger ones would just learn the topic. They would just learn who we were talking about, say Christopher Columbus, okay? And then I would ask, you know, basic fact questions about Christopher Columbus to the kids who had information in front of them so that the middle-aged children were learning some information, the little ones, the tiny ones were learning the topic, and the older ones were maybe doing some comparison and contrasting. And we'd all be together on the same page.
Now, some parents are concerned that the unit study approach can just take a lot of time and in the end not produce all that much. What's your take on it? I mean, is it an efficient way of learning, and is it an efficient way of teaching?
For me, it was, because especially when I had multiple ages around me, there were some multiple books, you know. There was multiple activities to correct and things like that. Well, when I gathered everyone together with the unit study, I could then just work together with the children and do one thing.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it really saved a lot of time. It took about an hour a week to prepare, so I gathered my materials and put together some items that I needed. We go to the library about once every 2 to 3 weeks, maybe once a month, depending on what we were doing. So we've got a library time, but I think any good homeschooler does. And then we have a little bit of gathering of some household items for some activities, maybe some shopping involved if you're doing recipes. But other than that, it's really not hard. My daughter taught For God So Loved the World, which is a study of the Eastern Hemisphere. She taught it at the age of 15 to fifth graders.
Wow.
And they just basically opened it up, read it, did the math activity, and cooked lunch with the recipe.
What do you say to parents who say, I think it would be a lot easier if I just went out and bought some textbooks and workbooks and just said, read these books, sit here at this boring desk, read these boring books, and then do your boring fill-in-the-blank workbooks, and I'm going to go out and do my boring work, and we'll get a whole lot more accomplished this way. Did I set you up nicely for that one?
Right, yes. I once did a character in curriculum workshop, and I said some curriculum builds the wrong kind of character. It's not all about just long-suffering.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm afraid that's exactly what you're doing there, is just building long-suffering and patient endurance.
Yeah, but you're not always learning that much with textbooks and workbooks.
They're not. That's why we started this, because we didn't see it in the testing. While we're asking the questions in the testing room, we didn't hear the answers coming through, and we said There must be a better way. Plus, children don't stay homeschooling when they're bored like that, Kevin. They go back to school where there's more stimulation in the classroom.
Yeah, if I want boring, I'll go to boring and we'll do boring in the classroom.
Exactly, exactly. So we wanted the house to become our laboratory. We wanted the kitchen to become the science lab, and we wanted the living room to become the reading center, and we wanted, you know, just all kinds of places, the outdoors to become our outdoor lab, and the garden, and all of those things where the kids can get their hands on all kinds of activities. We love to build terrariums that are indicative of the region of geography. So if we're in the tundra, we go pick out little tiny flowers and things and make a tundra terrarium. So it's really fun to do that, where you have the indoors coming, outdoors coming indoors, indoors going outdoors, all those good things.
This is a truly radical form of learning, I think, to a lot of people listening to the program right now, Terry. Speaking with Terry Spray from Christian Cottage Schools right now. But Terry, you know, as a lot of people are going to be concerned that you're going to have some gaps in your children's learning if you do this unit study approach.
You know, that's why in our unit studies, Kevin, we went ahead and put a what we call main points to study at the beginning of each unit. And we also put in vocabulary with even a glossary at the end of each little section that we call a unit of study, which is a topic that we cover for about a month of time. And so at the beginning of this 1 month study, the parent can see, okay, here's the main points I really want to drive home while we're learning, and then they can review the vocabulary, use it for spelling, different activities that we give the parents suggestions for. But then at the end of the unit, or even as a review at the end of the year, go back over those main points to study. See if the children still recall. Maybe they can write an answer out if you wanted to do a little quiz with them. So those are all kinds of things that you can make sure there's not gaps. And when we wrote these, that's what we were really cautious about, to make sure that we do something with geography every year, something with government every year, something with history, and obviously the literature is going to be a complement to everything we do, and a variety of writing activities. So the children really are getting a rich experience.
And I think what we're after here is retention. You know, there are a lot of gaps in my brain, a lot of gaps in my learning, Terry, and I went through the hardcore textbook approach back in the 70s when my folks were homeschooling me. We didn't have any of this newfangled unit study stuff going on back then. But a lot of... Yeah, right. A lot of gaps in my learning because I didn't retain enough. And I think that's the key. We've got to go after retention here.
The retention is the key. You are so right. Matter of fact, my children are kind of an interesting story here. My daughter tells me today that she's a great hit at parties because people corner her and say, "How do you know all these things?" And she smiles and says, "Unit studies." And our son felt so qualified that he knew so many things. He went out as a teenager and qualified for some of the final rounds of Jeopardy.
Wow. Wow, that's impressive. That's impressive. What are the overall results you're seeing over the years? Families to homeschool.
Families that homeschool write back to me, since we've been doing this for generations now. My own grandchildren are being homeschooled. I get these beautiful letters, especially about the unit studies, where one young lady wrote to me recently and said, "When I took my history class in college, people were amazed at what I knew, and I realized that it was the unit studies that gave me that retention. They had taken classes, but no one remembered anything except me."
Wow. Wow. Well, and you know, I think about 90 to 95% of education is a waste of time because you don't retain and you don't apply. You never learn how to apply the factoring of trinomials. You never really understand how the principles that you picked up in mathematics or science or literature apply to real life. And therefore, you know, much of that education is fairly useless unless it gets applied, unless you can retain it.
One of the key things we do in unit studies is called the discovery approach. And this puts the awe back in learning, the awe of God, because we're discovering how things are patterned. Here's a good example of it. My 7-year-old and 6-year-old were studying about the ziggurat. The ziggurats are those things like the Tower of Babel that were created in kind of this pyramid style of construction. And we were learning about a ziggurat and what it was. And then they learned, we went into another region of the world. And sure enough, the ancient people in that area built a ziggurat. And the ancient people in another area built a ziggurat. And my children said, oh, do you think maybe the Tower of Babel was a ziggurat? And I said, yes. Absolutely. And these people came from that. And I thought how lacking that is in the history book, and yet the little children figured it out themselves.
Yeah.
Because they could see the discovery of history. They could see God's hand opening up. Science, oh, Kevin, science reveals the glory of God. And we've turned our way totally away from that. It breaks my heart.
Yeah.
That we're supposed to learn about God through science, not apart from God.
Amen. And we're losing a sense of reality because we're losing a sense of God. We lose the sense of wonder and awe at the creation. And in the end, I think we destroy science. And then that's what's happening right now. And that's kind of my spiel. You're borrowing my spiel there, Terry, as you talk about the importance of the fear of God and the worship of God and the education of our children. And I know you bring all these principles together in your materials, and I want to recommend your materials to people who have been listening to the program today, all available at ChristianCottage.com on the web, ChristianCottage.com. Terry, thanks again for joining us on Generations. We need to get you back more often on this program.
That would be wonderful, Kevin. I love it.
Yeah, I appreciate you, and we'll be back in just a moment. Friends, I encourage you to restructure your concept of education. It's important to do that because secular education has ruined education, and I think much of conventional education has been a secularized form of education that isn't really rooted in the fear of God, doesn't understand the importance of life integration and the unity of the various particulars, and that, of course, is a Trinitarian form of education. I bring these principles down to very, very basic level of understanding through lots and lots of illustrations in my book, Upgrade, The 10 Secrets to the Best Education for Your Child. I would recommend the book, Upgrade, to you if you have children and want the best education, if you want to understand what the Bible says about education and get the basic ideas down straight before you try to do this at home. Get my book, Upgrade, The 10 Secrets to the Best Education for Your Child, available at KevinSwanson.com, where you can hear this program anytime, anywhere in the world. That's KevinSwanson.com. You can also pick this up by video at thehomeschoolchannel.tv, sponsored by the American Family Association. We also appreciate the fact the AFA has put us on their Sky Angel satellite outreach as well. So again, you can get this program by video at Sky Angel or thehomeschoolchannel.tv. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.